WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshall guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going to be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to Monday Night Talk, the first Monday Night Talk of October. A sad Monday, indeed. Anybody who's paid attention to the news today is realizing the tragedy that we saw in Las Vegas and the lives that were lost. So take a moment to reflect on yet another tragedy. It's, whether it's Columbine or Sandy Hook Elementary or even the Pulse nightclub 1 year ago. It's very interesting, and I think that'll come into our conversation and at certain points this evening. We have a great show lined up for you. We'll start things off after we check in with Malcolm. We'll check in with State Senator Vinny DiMaceto. Chat with Vinny, who has recently been named the co-chair of the Senate Task Force, which is going to work towards strengthening local retail. We'll check in with him, and we'll also check in with, we'll even speak with the senator. I believe that last year, when we had the Pulse nightclub incident, the senator, ironically, had joined us to chat for a couple of moments in regards to yet another gun violence, another incident, major incident that took place. We'll speak with him about that. Then we get Dr. Rolf Frater, who is a chief of oncology and hematology with the Signature Healthcare Brockton Hospital. They get a grand opening coming up for their new cancer center this Wednesday. We'll chat a little bit about that. Then we have a special one-hour segment. Now, prior to tonight's show, I was actually planning a segment, a roundtable segment, also featuring call-ins. We don't do a lot of call-ins here on Monday Night Talk, but we thought we would open it up to the folks, because a lot has been going on, not only here locally, but in the nation. I think the thing that inspired me, we had a local official who actually was asked to resign after he made a post that was in regards to the New England Patriots football players. Some of the words that he used, many people saw as racial terms, and he stepped down. So the thought was to talk about racism. Is this something that, dividing us locally and nationally? Also talk about this controversy in regards to athletes, sports athletes, who are, some of them are protesting. And there are folks who are, those who serve our military, who aren't too happy with it. So there's kind of a divide as to, is it okay? Is it someone's right to either, sit, or raise their fist, or take a knee during the playing of our country's anthem? So we've got some guests who are going to join us. And yes, I think we should also, part of the conversation is, more violence. Nearly 60 people lost their lives, 515 wounded, whether all 515 were from the shots that were fired from 32 stories above, or people trampling to get to stay out of the path of those bullets that were raining down for
Yeah, the update now is 59 dead and 527 injured.
That voice, of course, is a gentleman who has he's produced the show, and he's also co-hosted some segments. It's Jesse Wilkins. Jesse does his own podcast.
I do.
It's called?
The Men of Business Podcast.
So I thought he's a very opinionated guy, but usually some of the conversation that he brings, he knows how to bring balance, but he also knows how to bring some thought-provoking ideas to the table. So I thought, Jesse, once you be a part of this conversation, I also reached out to Bishop Tony Branch. He is the chair of Brockton's Diversity Commission. Keith Hayes, he's a podcaster and a talk show host, also specializes in sports. Guy who I see always posting a lot of opinions, that I would invite him. That I would also reach out to a Tony O'Brien. I'll give you more of that list in a moment.
I love this time of year. Rustling leaves, a crisp wind blowing, apple picking for homemade apple pie, a sunny day in a corn maze, a bonfire on a cool night. Cigars, and a half gallon of hot apple cider. Apple pie. We made it ourselves. This has nothing to do with Brennan's Smoke Shop, but everything to do with life. It's short, yet so sweet. Kind of like pumpkin spice coffee. It comes and goes like autumn wind. Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and now on Pope's Island in New Bedford. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the very best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Customers must have a valid state or federal ID to enter the store. Message me on Facebook.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
Now remember that number when you are prompted in the second hour for our roundtable conversation. As I was finishing up, Tony O'Brien, retired Navy SEAL, will be joining us in studio as well. We'll speak with Mike Riley, a CBS sports anchor and reporter, and they'll comment on some of those issues that we're gonna sit as a roundtable and kind of discuss and open up the phone lines. Joining us right now on the phone line is State Senator Vinny DiMaceto. Senator, how are you doing this evening?
Kevin, how you doing? And thanks for having me on.
I have to say, Senator, it's. I was just speaking with Jesse, who's sitting in studio tonight, joining me, and it's. I think it's ironic. I think a year ago, you and I had a conversation the following Monday after the Pulse nightclub. Do you remember that?
Wow. It's true. You're right.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. And actually, I believe you actually reached out to me like, Kevin, I'd like to come on and just kind of say something. And so it's, I don't know if it's eerie or what. Give me your thoughts on seeing all this unfold today.
I just finished watching the TV, and it just breaks your heart. I mean, you just look at those people, and they just, you know, there's so many people affected by just one man's evil, and I don't know what to say. I just can't imagine that, you know, people can be so evil, but, you know, clearly it's the case. And it just, you know, every incident that this happens, it just kind of takes another thing away from us that, you know, there's no place that's safe. And it's just, it's sad, but I have to believe that at the end of this, you know, you hear some of the things from, you know, people that were there, and the heroism that was brought out in people, and the, you know, they literally having blood donations there, and they can't keep up with it. They literally are making appointments for the next few days because so many people have come out and tried to help in any way they can. And then, you know, your hope is that what this evil brought out is good in everybody else, and that's certainly my hope. And hope we can be a little bit more mindful of these tragedies and think about, you know, how we as a society can be better. I don't know. I literally am speechless, and I'm just sad.
And maybe I believe that a year ago when you and I spoke, I think one of the parts of the conversation was after the Pulse nightclub and after Sandy Hook Elementary, the Sandy Elementary School shooting. Do you expect that we're going to hear again, more calls for the state, whether it's the, you know, Congress or whether it's the state legislature, to push for even tougher gun laws or ban on large capacity weapons?
That's going to happen. There's no question about it. And it's just, America is a nation that, you know, has, you know, the Second Amendment has been a big deal. Other countries, they don't have that. And so you're going to see some of that conversation happen. But, you know, at this particular juncture, from what I understand in this particular case, this automatic weapon that he had was, you know, illegal and got it illegally. And then he had weapons that he purchased totally legally and went through the background checks and did all of the stuff that you would have to do. Something snapped in this person. I don't know what or why, but, you know, and I'm sorry, you know, our hope is that, you know, you'll get at least an understanding of what happened to him, but, that's going to happen. There's no question about people going to talk about that. I mean, here in Massachusetts, you know, many of the weapons that he had are already not legal here. So I don't know that it would have changed. And then the one that he did have that was the most, from what I can, and again, please, because I don't know. I just came in from work and catching the news, but the automatic, fully automatic one was illegal for him to have.
Mm. Well, let's talk about something, a couple of things on a lighter note. I know you and members of the South Shore Legislative Delegation actually had an opportunity to assist in raising some money for the victims of Hurricane Harvey, Irma, and Maria during a telethon. You want to give us your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it was us, the delegation, but really PAC TV and a group of people are saying, hey, listen, you know, we need to help our friends and neighbors. A lot of these communities kind of came out across the country when we had our terrible snowstorms, and it's just fitting that we would turn around and help these communities. So just encouraging to see Plymouth come together in this region and Plymouth County, really, and help to support these families in a very small way, but at least a message that, hey, America's hometown and Plymouth County, you know, stands with you, and we wanted to help in any small way that we can.
And it was fantastic. Actually, the week prior to, we had Donna Rodriguez, who is the outreach coordinator for PAC TV, and Dr. Gary Maestas, who is superintendent of schools and is also a Rotarian, kind of talking. They had set a goal for $100,000, but $25,000 is pretty good too, yeah?
Well, here's the thing. Because it was a few weeks later, I think what ended up happening is people had already found other avenues to give. So I think that we could have done that. It would have just been if we had done it right away. But because it was a few weeks later and people had already found other places, whether it was the Red Cross or different organizations. Here in Plymouth, we had New Hope Chapel, you know, filled up a truck filled with, a big tractor trailer filled with supplies, drove it on down to Harvey. They did it again for Irma. So there were other avenues, and I think that's what happened. But as a community, I think you probably, that goal of $100,000, I think that happened just in other ways.
Again, we're speaking with the State Senator Vinny DiMacedo, representing the Plymouth and Barnstable District. And the reason why we have you on is I know that you've been named the co-chair of the task force that's going to help help local retail. And I guess one of the first questions I would have is, what is the main mission of the committee?
Well, I think what we've seen happen, and I think you see this every day, a new store is closing. Macy's is closing stores. Benny's just closed down. There's the oldest hardware store in Massachusetts just decided it's closing its doors. There's no question that bricks and mortar retail establishments are really taking a hit because the world's changed and the whole online, marketplace has become more and more prevalent, and the easier it gets, the more people use them. And so we're starting to just have a conversation about this and say, you know, we as legislators, is there anything we can do? Let's hear from the experts. Let's hear from the people that have retail establishments. Let's hear from consumers. Let's hear from different people and see, is there anything that we can do to help keep this industry alive? And the reason
it is important is because one in five jobs in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts comes from the retail sector. And so how is it that we can, you know, give this due attention? And this really is a fact-finding mission. I wish I could tell you I know how we're going to solve this problem. I don't have the answer to that. But as a co-chair with Senator Michael Rodrigues and a large group of people in the retail sector and labor sector as well, we're going to have a conversation, travel around the state, and try to put together a report that at least helps enlighten us about how we might be able to do this better in the Commonwealth.
Now, has the task force, have you had your first meeting yet? If so, what became of it? If not, do you have an agenda for the first meeting?
We did. Actually, we had our first meeting today, and it really was to talk about where we're going to go as far as going around the state. Through that conversation, we realized you can't go everywhere, but we wanted to hit corners of the state, and so we're going to go down to Cape Cod, and there's a lot of retail and retail establishments down there. We're going to go to Western Massachusetts to be determined where exactly, and we're going to go to Merrimack Valley, which is, you know, borders New Hampshire, and of course, many people know that the retail establishments in Merrimack Valley have really been hit hard, more than even others, because of the fact that they border New Hampshire that has no sales tax. And so we're going to have a conversation. We're going to listen to them. Today was really a meeting of, let's introduce ourselves. Let's kind of lay out what the goal is, and that's really to talk about, you know, what's happening to retail and to hear, you know, and to have us bring in, eventually have speakers come in and talk to us, you know, people who have studied the whole retail sector and what's happening. As I said, a lot of it was housekeeping and, you know, what we're going to do. So our plan is hopefully by June putting out a report after we've gone for the first Monday of every month. We are going to have our meetings. The first one will be in Boston. We'll bring in some experts. The next one will be going to Cape Cod, followed by and then just the different areas, which will bring us out to February, and then in February, March, we're going to, you know, hopefully start circling back and see what we've learned when we've gone out to Main Street America and found out what they're dealing with.
Is this strictly just businesses, small businesses? Are you also going to be looking at specific industries too?
I really think it's the goal of it is the bricks and mortar that are closing down. The ones that we've seen, we continue to see bricks and mortar closing down. So in some cases it's big stores, in some cases it's the little mom and pop small stores. Because there's all kinds of retail. I mean, Amazon's, you know, talking about moving here, and that's retail. And of course they have a different model, but our main focus, I think, is addressing the bricks and mortar buildings that have the retail establishments that employ so many people. What can we do? And frankly, what is retail going to look like 10 years from now? And what can we do to make it still be a vibrant, a vibrant place? And again, I don't have the answer because, you know, this whole new economy, you look at Amazon, and it's been successful for a lot of people, and it's created a lot of jobs in other places, but it has hurt the local retail establishments, and especially the downtowns. I think you see this, you know, go to the Main Street downtowns that used to be the areas where there were, vibrant businesses, and they've gone, you know, and they've pretty much had a very difficult time surviving. And then you go to the malls, and you look at the malls that were once incredibly active and, you know, and just centers of commerce, and they've kind of dried up. So there's been a lot of changing going on in this industry, and it was the mall that put the downtown centers out of business, and now we've got Amazon putting them out of business. And so some of this is cyclical, and we can't necessarily change it, but at least we can start talking about it, and maybe there are things that we can do to lessen the pain, at least.
You know, the first thing I thought of when you were talking about how, you know, downtowns went away to malls, the city of Brockton is the same way, where the downtown area thrived, Main Street thrived. Once they built the Westgate Mall, a lot of folks ended up going there, and a lot of the businesses started drying up in the downtown area. So it's, I actually spot on with that analogy, so to speak. I guess
you're going to, you know, and these are the things that we're going to look at. We're going to look at all of that and see, you know, in some cases, some of these downtown areas are doing well because there's tourism and people come down and they want to see the little shops, or because there's, you know, other things. So what is it? You know, Newburyport is a great example of a very vibrant downtown. Why is that the case? And I don't have the answer to that, but I, you know, we're going to try to find that out. Where is it that it works? And can we take where it works in other places and help bring that to areas where you look at Brockton that has been hit hard? But, you know, in that case, you know, in one case, we got the district attorney who made sure that, you know, he took his, you know, his office, and it stayed in Brockton instead of moving out of Brockton so that you continue to have activity. In the town of Plymouth, a great example is we just took what used to be out of downtown, which was our town hall, which is down the road, and now that's going to be right in downtown Plymouth. Of course, you have a lot of employment there, a lot of activity, and I think that will help drive and continue to keep that downtown Plymouth area alive.
So I would ask you, are you the kind of guy that, you know, you're going to, even though you're going to be away from the task force, you'll do a little bit of investigating in your own district and kind of see what's going on with some of the businesses and how they're doing and how successful they are? Or do you already kind of have some of that intel?
Well, I, you know, to a certain degree, as you know, I'm a small business owner as well. I own a gas station. I've got a pretty good grasp of retail. I've been in it for 27 years. So, you know, I think I can bring some of that. But in fairness, I have an industry that still hasn't been affected by the online industry, because it you can't, at least from what I know, you can't order your gas online yet. And so, but, you know, there are all kinds of different things, and I do talk to a lot of people. So my goal is to try to get a flair for it from my own constituency and people I know and have that conversation. But I really am looking forward to learning. You know, we had people at the table that were from labor, you know, people that are, you know, that have been pushing very hard from a labor perspective of, you know, job, you know, what's this mean for jobs. And I'm very excited about that, because having people from business like the Mass Retail Association, people from the Car Dealers Association, people from you know, different business avenues, and then also having labor at the same table hearing the same message, I think is going to allow us to come up with a better product when it's all done. So it's not a biased analysis. It's listening to everybody at the table and trying to come up with some consensus that will help to continue to keep this, you know, the retail sector moving. I think we all like being able to know that there's a local hardware store down the street, and there's a local barber shop, and there's a record store down the road, or you name the business. We like having that stuff local and accessible to us. And to do that, we all kind of have to think a little bit about that too. We have to kind of think about, when we're shopping, we have to be mindful of, you know, that little small local business person, and see how, you know, we want them to be there. How do we keep them vibrant?
Right. Who are you supporting? Who exactly, and who are they helping as far as their employees, and is it helping the local economy? A lot of times, small local businesses, they usually give back to the community that they're within. So that's
absolutely
part of the success. Final thing I want to let you speak on, if you will, I believe that there was a ceremony held this weekend to rename the Greenbush Commuter Rail Station. Were you there?
I was there, and I was thrilled that I had a chance to actually even part of it. As you know, it's not directly in my area of where my constituents are, but I had the privilege of actually serving with Frank Hines for 10 years. As a matter of fact, in the legislature, I actually sat right next to him for 10 years, and I just and really got to know him. But it's funny, I actually knew him from before, because in 1978 and 79, when I was in junior high, he was our guidance counselor at Silver Lake. And so I knew him from then, and then, you know, how many years later, I ended up sitting right next to him in the legislature. And I've got to tell you, just from my experience, and I've been now at this for almost 20 years, one of the most honest, decent people I have ever had the privilege of serving with. Incredibly ethical person, and two, in many cases, you know, sometimes when you're like that, and you take votes based on, hey, listen, this is what's best for my constituency. This is what I feel comfortable with. There are a lot of people pushing you in different directions. He never wavered. He always tried to do the right thing. And I'm thrilled that we can have this conversation while he's there to hear us being able to say what a great man of integrity he is and what a great advocate he was for the Marshfield and for Scituate.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us and talking about so many different subjects. We always like having our South Shore delegation on, no matter what side of the aisle they're on, to talk about what they're working on and what's going on up at the State House and how it's affecting their district. So we really appreciate it, Senator.
Hey, Kevin, thanks for having me on as usual.
You got it. Have yourself a great evening, my friend.
Thanks, bye.
There you go. There he is, State Senator Vinny DiMacedo. We're representing the Plymouth and Barnstable District, talking about a number of things. And Jesse, did you hear in his voice how he was a little astonished for a moment there that he realized, as I did, and I didn't realize until, you know, I came into the studio and I go, oh my God, you know, when the whole Pulse nightclub thing took place, he was the, you know, one of the first guests that I spoke with, and he was very, you know.
You have to bring him on during happier times next time, because it's two of the worst shootings in the history of the United States.
Well, they're saying that this one was the deadliest.
This one was the deadliest.
The deadliest in our nation's history, and they're still trying to figure out why it happened, why this individual, there's nobody can figure out why. The brother says, it was one of those things, like, you know.
Yeah, I think it's a little premature to say. I mean, obviously, it's premature to say anything.
It's way too early.
You don't know what his motive is, but
right.
I mean, to assume that he just snapped is a little. I don't think that's the case. I mean, he clearly premeditated this attack big time. I mean, he loaded up on guns and ammo, booked a hotel room that faced, the concert.
Right.
And clearly.
Right, took out two windows.
Yeah. Clearly planned the attack. So to assume that he just snapped and just like, I got to be fully prepared for this attack is kind of crazy. So.
And what's even how it touches it touches close to home for me is my sister spent the weekend in Las Vegas.
Yep.
And she was getting on the plane as this was happening, and the airport is right with that. And I think they shut down the airport right after her flight.
Oh,
she was
hotels right across the street.
And oddly enough, she was actually on Channel 7. She wasn't on, like, they were interviewing her, but she was, like, in the background. There's a picture. Somebody did
that's crazy.
A screenshot, and one of the women who was just getting off the plane was being interviewed. And she was just
the concert
like,
was practically on the airport. I mean, like, the
right.
People had spilled over actually onto the airport grounds, you know, running away from gunfire.
It's definitely sad.
It was right there.
And we can only pray for the families and the victims and the victims' families. Though they were involved in it. We're going to step aside here on Monday Night Talk, and when we come back, talk about a grand opening of a cancer center in Brockton with Dr. Rolf Frater. Right here on Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
How much of a difference could the new cancer center at Signature Healthcare make in your life? The difference of getting all the advanced care you need in one location, right here in your community. The difference of having your own personalized cancer care team, covering every aspect of your treatment with access to national clinical trials. The difference of scheduling your first appointment within a day so you can get started on your treatment right away.
I'm Dr. Stephen Lane, Chief of Radiation Oncology at the Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare. Here we deliver world-class care right in your community with Harvard-affiliated physicians working hand-in-hand with specialists from Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. That's one of the ways the Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare is making a difference every day.
To learn more about the difference we could make in your life, visit our website, mysignaturecare.org/cancercare. The Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center.
I'm Peter from Tiny and Sons Glass. You know, my grandpa's family car never got a broken windshield. My dad's never got a broken windshield either. Why? I did some research. The Department of Transportation reports back in 1940, Americans drove 333 million miles at 35 miles an hour. Now we drive 3 trillion miles at 75 miles an hour. So there it is. We drive more, we drive faster. So we hit highway debris more often and at greater speeds. Safety glass does not shatter, but it will crack and it will pit. We at Tiny and Sons Glass, we come to you. We come to your home, we come to your work. We even come to your kid's soccer practice. We replace your windshield. Insurance pays. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Thank you for keeping your radio dial set here to 95.9 WATD. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk. And our next guest, he is no stranger to Monday Night Talk. He has been on our program before. Actually, to kind of give us a little bit of a sneak preview of what we're going to be talking about today. Actually, it was the designs and the building of a cancer center located in Brockton, courtesy of the fine folks at Signature Healthcare, Brockton Hospital. And the gentleman who was here talking with me and going to be here with me for this segment is Dr. Rolf Reiter. He is the chief of medical oncology and hematology. And I think at the time when he was here, he had been named the chief of medical oncology and hematology. Welcome back to the radio program. You're here, doctor, to kind of tell us about big doings this coming Wednesday night.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here again. As you mentioned, I was here 18 months ago. At that time, I had just started here, and it is finally here for all of us, for the patients and families and others in Brockton and surrounding communities, the Cancer Center in clinical affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, really the Cancer Center of Signature Healthcare, is opening this Wednesday. And it is truly a multidisciplinary facility. That's really where cancer care is. In 2017, the coordinated interaction among multiple specialists, all aimed at treating and ideally curing, eradicating for the long term, a cancer.
As he was saying, this is taking place 25 Liberty Street. From 4 to 7 p.m. at the Cancer Center on the campus of Signature Healthcare Brockton Hospital. And an exciting event 18 months ago, we were talking about it. What have been the building blocks? What have you had to do? What has been the process been like over the past 18 months to realize this big day on Wednesday?
One important thing was to have all of the clinical staff on the ground, and I was fortunate that my partner, Dr. Lisa Manera, and my team came over in March 2016, and that was an important component in multidisciplinary care, having all the specialists there in conjunction with Dr. Stephen Lane and his colleagues in radiation oncology and an excellent surgical group and other specialists. We now have all the pieces for multidisciplinary care, and we've been doing that for the last 18 months, and I'm proud to say that in the last fiscal year, my partner and I and our team in medical oncology has seen well over 1,000 new consults. But to have it all in one building for patient convenience in a warm surrounding is really a tremendous advantage. And that's what this center is all about, enhancing the patient experience, making it as comfortable for them, what's called patient-centered care, all in one facility.
And kind of the idea of instead of having to migrate to the big city, heading to Boston, it's basically, you know, bringing Boston to Brockton, where folks who are diagnosed with a form of cancer and being able to treat it in their backyard.
That's exactly right. That's a tremendous advantage. And we have brought Boston to Brockton, as you said, for about 90-95% of all cancers. You can take any cancer, whether it's colorectal, head and neck, lung, breast, all of which we treat in multidisciplinary fashion. They can be treated down here. And that is not to in any way underestimate. We cannot overstate the importance of our direct affiliation with the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in providing top-tier, cutting-edge cancer care for those patients who need ultra-specialized care, liver surgeries to remove metastatic deposits in colon cancers, bone marrow transplants, specialized sarcoma care. This partnership is invaluable.
you talk about this new cancer center, the big grand opening taking place, and it is equipped with state-of-the-art equipment, with some of the things that are here that, you know what, maybe there aren't other local hospitals that have this type of equipment.
Well, we have a state-of-the-art, absolutely new, it's called LINAC, a linear accelerator, a state-of-the-art machine for providing radiation therapy, and it can do what's called a stereotactic radiation or cyberknife, essentially focusing a laser in a highly precise manner in a small area, whether it's the brain or the liver or elsewhere, to a lymph node to wipe out a cancerous deposit. We have a state-of-the-art infusion suite, and this is all co-localized. So the patient, say, with a rectal cancer can receive their chemotherapy and then walk across the hall to the linear accelerator and receive their radiation therapy.
How important is it to you as a physician, as somebody who's leading this team, to have, you know, cutting-edge technology at your disposal and being able to treat people right here, you know, in and around the South Shore?
It is incredibly important. It really can't be done any other way. The pace of advances in medical oncology and cancer care in general is just breathtaking. What we're doing now is quite different from what we did even 2 years ago, let alone 10 years ago, with all the new agents, with the cancer immunotherapy, with sequencing actually the tumor DNA, looking for genes that we can target with new therapies. To have a state-of-the-art facility, to have outstanding colleagues, and to have outstanding colleagues at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center to work with in this fashion, but doing most of it on the South Shore, in the Brockton area, in the new cancer center is incredibly important.
And you've mentioned it a couple of times about the partnership, the relationship with the Beth Israel Deaconess. How key is that to moving forward and being able to offer treatment and be able to, you know, do what you guys do?
It is a centerpiece, and the overall medical director, Dr. Mark Garnick, an internationally recognized expert in prostate cancer and genitourinary cancers, has been very helpful and a constant presence here, and being able to work with colleagues there. And we are part of the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, actually just based down here, has been critical. And as an example, these days, still a very difficult cancer to treat, pancreatic cancer. Oftentimes, we give chemotherapy up front to shrink it for cases that are potentially treatable with surgery. And then these individuals, men and women, will go to the Beth Israel Deaconess for what's called CyberKnife, essentially a highly focused laser on a small area to try to shrink what's left. And then they go for a very specialized surgery called a pancreatic duodenectomy or Whipple procedure. And this results in very significant survival, maybe not cure, but this type of multidisciplinary coordinated care between two institutions utilizing the Harvard resources at the Beth Israel Deaconess is critical, and it really allows our patients to get absolutely state-of-the-art, top-tier care.
Okay, we're speaking with Dr. Rolf Frater. He is the Chief of Medical Oncology and Hematology for the new cancer center at the Signature Healthcare Brockton Hospital, located at 25 Liberty Street, and they're going to be doing their grand opening this coming Wednesday from 4 to 7 p.m., from what I understand, is that folks who attend are going to have an opportunity to kind of take a little bit of a tour?
Absolutely. This is welcome, open to anyone who'd like to come, patients, their families, the general public. It's going to be quite an event. There will be tours of the whole facility, which is beautiful and just beginning to be used. Not only the officials from the Beth Israel Deaconess as well as Brockton Hospital will be there and the clinical staff, so it's going to be quite an event.
What kind of pride do you and the staff and the folks over at Signature Healthcare take in being able to give these tours and show people what you guys have been working on over the past couple of years?
Well, to actually see this come to fruition for me personally, having spent many years in Boston, trained there and in New York City, to be able to be a part of a much larger team with colleagues here and at the Beth Israel Deaconess, bringing it to the people of the South Shore, Brockton, and surrounding communities is incredibly gratifying. I can't wait really to get a hand on the controls there to help do this.
Talk to me. There's also going to be more things going on. Is there going to be music? There's going to be some hors d'oeuvres. Talk to me about at least this is a festive event.
It is. We're celebrating bringing a whole new level of care to this area. There's going to be a big tent there, hors d'oeuvres, tours, as you mentioned, music, a very brief, as brief as possible program explain this. So it's going to be a very fun night. And this Wednesday, that's October 4th from 4 to 7 p.m. on the campus of the hospital.
Now, from my understanding is there will be tours from between 4 and 5 p.m. and then again from 6 to 7 p.m. if you are interested. 25 Liberty Street, you want to be over there between 4 and 7 p.m. for this fantastic event. I guess the other thing I want to ask is the investment. What kind of an investment has been made to bring a cancer treatment, a cancer center like this, to the Brockton area?
Well, you have to have the investment, of course, in the building itself, which is on the order of $25 million. And that has been quite an investment on the hospital's part. There is, of course, major fundraising going on with the community. The hospital employees have contributed an enormous amount. The cafe in there is going to be the Stephen Friot Cafe for a former facilities director and a fine man that the employees have been contributing to. So it's been a major fundraising effort and has taken the resources of the hospital and the community, and it's still ongoing, and we would welcome any donations to help this cause.
And is there a website? Is there a way for folks, or should they just contact the hospital or the center directly if somebody wanted to, you know, donate or help the cause moving forward?
There is a website at Signature Healthcare and also Brockton Hospital, and there will be a link there to make donations for the center.
I want to ask you, give me your personal thoughts as to seeing this day coming to fruition and knowing that moving forward, you know, that folks will know that they can go to Signature Healthcare to be able to receive, not only to be able to be diagnosed, hopefully in the earliest stages, and being treated close to home.
It's incredibly gratifying. It's what I've dedicated my career to for the last 17 years. I am personally grateful and humbled that not only my partner came over, Dr. Manera, but most of my team. And these are extraordinarily dedicated individuals who put the patient first, who do whatever is necessary to provide an outstanding patient experience. And to now be able to work with this team, continue to work with this team and other outstanding colleagues here in trying to cure cancer. And frankly, happily becoming more and more successful with all the new weapons coming out is a major milestone for me personally.
I have to ask you about that. Now, is it strictly going to be a treatment center, or will there be any research done, or is that not a part of the conversation at this moment?
No, it's very much a part of the conversation. And at these centers, we don't engage in so-called basic research. We don't do gene crunching, that sort of thing. That is better done at the universities that have people who are specialized in that. But we will most definitely be doing clinical research, clinical trials. And that's how all progress is made in this field. If you have a good agent, unless you have 100% success rate, which we don't have in any cancer, we're close in testicular cancer and Hodgkin lymphoma, but unless you have 100% success rate, you need to keep trying to do better. And once you get close to 100%, you want to do the same with less toxicity. So we will be participating in ongoing clinical trials in this center.
How exciting is it, though, that you look at, I'm sure when on your onset into being a physician and being somebody who specialized in cancer treatment, how far we have come in the treatment of cancer and learning about the disease itself in its many forms?
I started my fellowship in 1988, and I had the privilege of working at that time at the Dana-Farber under some really outstanding medical oncologists. But when you look back at what we had back then compared to now, it really is stone knives and bearskins compared to what we're doing now in terms of immunotherapy agents, which you see advertised on TV all the time, Opdivo, Keytruda, named two of them, really taking the brakes off the immune system to kill a cancer. Other targeted agents, I mean, a good example is the disease chronic myelogenous leukemia, CML. When I was a fellow, we literally would have to drop an atom bomb on these patients and hope they survive through that, and then do a bone marrow transplant, which really only cured a small handful. Now we treat CML with a pill that targets the oncogene, the cancer-causing gene that causes this. So the progress has been breathtaking, and it's a really exciting time in the field because of all we can do to help patients. But also there are a lot of challenges. I mentioned earlier pancreatic cancer, that's still a major one, melanoma, just to name two. So there's a long way to go. There's a lot for us to do, and there will be a lot of research that we'll be helping with to push this field forward.
Anything I haven't asked you, whether it's in regards to the grand opening this coming Wednesday or in regards to the center, but you feel it's kind of essential to telling our listeners who are tuned in right now?
The goal of this center is really, in a nutshell, to provide personalized cancer care, which is the name of the game, in a place where everyone knows your name. We will treat you as close to family as possible. The team here is just outstanding in that regard. That's a focus. You will get Harvard-level, university-level, cutting-edge care there in the convenience of your own backyard with an immediate pipeline into the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center as needed for those specialized functions.
And again, if you're interested in checking out the new cancer center located at the Signature Healthcare Brockton Hospital right on Libby Street. I was going to say Liberty Street, but that's on the other side of town. Libby Street. They are running tours from 4 to 5 and 6 to 7. The event itself is from 4 to 7 p.m. A little bit of jazz music, kind of fall themes. You're going to have some past hors d'oeuvres if you're interested. But again, this is going to be in our backyard right here on the South Shore. And it's basically bringing Boston to Brockton. And my guest has been Dr. Rolf Rader, Chief of Medical Oncology and Hematology. And he's been a fine conversation for this segment. Sir, thank you again for joining us, and best of luck moving forward. And hopefully we can have you in to talk more down the road.
My pleasure. It's wonderful to be here anytime. Happy to do so.
You got it. All right. We are going to step aside. And when we come back, more Monday Night Talk, a promised roundtable with a bunch of guests to talk about some very important topics right here on Monday Night Talk, heard only on 95.9 WATD.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
How much of a difference could the new cancer center at Signature Healthcare make in your life? The difference of getting all the advanced care you need in one location, right here in your community. The difference of having your own personalized cancer care team, covering every aspect of your treatment, with access to national clinical trials. The difference of Harvard-affiliated oncologists working hand-in-hand with colleagues from Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center.
I'm Dr. Rolf Rader, Chief of Hematology and Oncology at the Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare. Here, we'll schedule your first appointment within a day so you can get started on your treatment right away. That's one of the ways the Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare is making a difference every day.
To learn more about the difference we can make in your life, visit our website, mysignaturecare.org/cancercare. The Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return for the second hour of Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 FM, WATD, World Wide Web, 959WATD.com. Of course, Jesse Wilkins is my co-host for the show. How are we doing so far, Jesse?
It's been a dream come true.
and your nose grew that much. Jesse, who's not only a fantastic producer, but also does his own podcast, Menisms, and it's podcast, and also a guy who he's real good when it comes to social media.
I like to think so. Decent.
Absolutely. Decent.
Could be better.
So he's part of
it. All could be better.
So he's part of tonight's conversation. The other voice you just heard a second ago is a gentleman who's been on this program many times before, Bishop Tony Branch. Tony is a community leader in the city of Brockton, also chairs the Brockton's Diversity Commission, also sits on the Southeastern Regional School Committee, probably has 16 other hats that I don't know of, but those are the ones that we're going to mention now. but I thought he was instrumental in part of the conversation that we are going to talk about tonight. Keith Hayes, somebody else who is a talk show host, podcaster, somebody who I've done radio with for many years on and off, somebody who knows how to talk various conversations, some of this being related to sports, and some of the opinions on a story that we did on WATD last week, and some of his thoughts that he shared on social media. I thought he was instrumental in being a part of the conversation. And then another old friend to the show is the one and only Tony O'Brien, Anthony O'Brien Sr., a gentleman is a retired military officer, somebody who has served in the Navy SEALs. I believe you started in the Marine Corps. Yes, sir?
Yes, sir. Hurrah.
Hurrah. And somebody who I have seen many times during my travels, doing coverage here or for other media outlets, Tony, being in around, whether it's ceremonies for parades, whether it's going into the schools and teaching the kids the meaning of Memorial Day and Veterans Day. And, you know, he'll come in with a variety of camo gear and get the kids involved and get them to understand. All these individuals are essential, as are you, when the time is right to call in and be a part of the program. One other person I have not mentioned just yet, and that is Mike Sarge Riley. Mike, of course, with CBS Radio. He's a sports anchor and reporter. You hear him on the AM and FM side. And Keith, did you want us?
I just got to say something that's just kind of funny right now. I'm watching us in the studio, and all of us here have our smartphones on because we're on Facebook Live. And I just got to say something for people who are our age. If you read George Orwell's book 1984 back in the day, and they discussed Big Brother, I just want people to know that who would have thought that we were Big Brother? We always thought that Big Brother was going to be this government organization, but right now, here today, and after seeing these videos out of Vegas and all these cop videos and stuff, Big Brother absolutely became the citizenship of our world today, and that's pretty crazy.
Well, just so folks know, this portion of Monday Night Talk is a special roundtable. I've already named all the key players, and we're going to discuss multiple topics, recent news items, which include a local officials' comments on the New England Patriots players kneeling during the playing of the national anthem and had what many felt were racial overtones, using phrases like turds and monkeys to identify those members that didn't respect the process. So I thought it would be a good idea to talk about one of the two topics, which would be racism. Is it a growing trend, or has it always been a longstanding problem? What's right and wrong regarding the actions for anyone participating in the playing of our country's national anthem? That's also another topic. And then, of course, the mass shooting that took place in Las Vegas during a musical festival. So 22,000 concert goers were targeted by a lone gunman who killed nearly 60 individuals, mm-hmm. and more than 500 have been injured. Now that they haven't determined whether all of those were bullet wounds or if it was just people who were trampling each other to get out of harm's way of those bullets that were flying. For some, felt it was 15 minutes that they just heard the rat-tat-tat-tat of gunfire. And if you pay attention to the news reports, they said it took up to an hour for Las Vegas police to be able to enter that room before they were able to respond from the initial calls at 10:08. To the time that, you know, they were able to breach that door and find that lone gunman dead. So those are the topics that we're going to talk about. And I think we'll start out with the one in regards to the local official. And it seems that more and more the word racism is something that's said a lot, depending on what's being posted, what's being said. And I want to get the thoughts of the individuals here. Again, there was an individual who posted something on social media. And it seems as though, and I was talking with Jesse earlier, Jesse's like, sometimes people just don't have a filter. They don't understand what they're... Sometimes people don't get it. And I would ask Jesse, would you think that if somebody posted something in regards to calling someone turds and monkeys, especially if most of those people who were kneeling were African-American, that they correlated the two?
It's racism. there's no debating that. It was a racist post, and, you know, it's just weird to see on social media, where you know that all your friends, family, and coworkers are going to see it. It's weird to see someone's true colors come out just, you know, so blatantly. You know, you think that most people would, you know, try to channel that and, you know, to preserve their job or whatever. But, you know, sometimes you just get it handed to you on a silver platter and you don't fire the guy. He's a racist.
Now, it was something that took notice immediately. Bishop Tony Branch was one of the individuals who I reached out to because you were one of the first people who reached out to the mayor's office.
Correct.
Noting that this was a person who was appointed to a board.
Right.
And who was posting this.
Right. So I reached out to the mayor's office, but I want to say first, Kevin, to the families in Las Vegas, I would be remiss as a spiritual leader not to say that our prayers are with them, and our prayers are also with the law enforcement officers that were responsive to that event, and quite frankly, to the president, who gave a very compelling speech with respect to that incident. So God bless our nation. This incident, clearly, that involves Commissioner Pina was an incident that not only spoke to how he feels. Now, we're very careful not to call folks racist. We don't do that because I don't know his heart. But we will say that there is definitions for bigotry and there's definitions for racist remarks. Clearly, that fell in that category. Sure. But with respect to him, I notice a lot of people are focusing on dance, monkey, dance. But one of the things that we teach in communications, you begin with the sentence. The sentence spoke of those particular individuals as turds, which is excrement. That stood out to me. So when I heard the former commissioner say that he had no intention of, or we were getting it wrong, I found that to be very, very disingenuous. So his remarks were what they were, quite bigot. They were bigotry. And then when I also heard the follow-up to this, is people have said that his public posts consistently with respect to either the Brockton Hub or on his Facebook page, public posts, not private posts, were more consistent with having a very strong, a negative view of people of color. So, you know, we don't think that this was a mistake.
Here's my question. And again, I don't want to get hung up on one particular topic, but I want to make sure that we touch upon everything as evenly as possible. Then of course we turn it over to the folks who are tuned in. One thing that Mr. Hayes had brought up on social media, and one thing that should be observed is that Mr. Pina is not a Caucasian.
Yeah.
But the comment was made. Correct.
Correct. And you know what surprised me was that I got this information early on because being a member of the former member of the Brockton Junior Boxers board, what happened was he had posted this on a Fox 25 News page, and then it was one of our parents of one of the children who saw the comments, and then it went to the board, and then it rolled along from there. What really bothered me the most about this is that, one, again, these comments were made by someone who, in reality, when you talk about white supremacists and stuff, he's going to be viewed as a minority, so he's going to suffer transgressions just as you or I or somebody else of color, right, is number one. But number two, I think they have a bigger problem here because we're hearing that this behavior is pretty much has been there, and I'm now hearing that there were people who actually quit their employment at the VA hospital because of his actions and the way he acted. And here's the thing, you know, as a manager who worked at the MBTA for 23 years, an employee should not have to leave his job because of the way of someone's actions. So now you're looking at this point where that he was allowed to keep his job, and you have four people who left their position because of the way he acted. That's a lawsuit.
But let's look at this again. And again, I don't want this to be a microcosm to be a focus of an individual, but I'm looking at this as a general problem. And racism comes in all shapes and forms. And I don't care if it's necessarily a color, but it could be a culture. I think there's different... Am I incorrect in this assumption?
Racism denotes economic power. Racist remarks directly speak to the negative inferences that are made towards African Americans that were derived from remarks that were made during slavery on. But I'm a little confused here. We're saying that Commissioner Pina is a person of color. Why are you saying that?
We're saying he's not a Caucasian. I'm not saying that he's not a person of color.
Why are we saying that?
To be fair, because he is, what is he?
He's, I believe he's Portuguese and...
Portuguese is European.
He's some kind of Latin or Hispanic heritage. Yeah.
Right. Did you want to weigh in?
So, which most people consider a minority.
Yeah, okay.
But that doesn't mean you can't be racist.
It doesn't mean that, but I know that I'm a member of the Cape Verdean Association, sure. And of course I work very strongly with the Cape Verdean families, and I know that there was out there that he was Cape Verdean, and people pushed back on that. He clearly is not Cape Verdean, so that's why I paused a little bit about that.
There's no watering down of what I just want to make sure that we're accurate.
I got you.
But again, the general overall is, it seems more and more, and it seems since last year's presidential elections that we hear, you know, folks' fear of more and more racism, and people posting and being behaving in such a way.
The president, I believe that the president has opened up the doors, and I call when I'm doing, even in conversations in human resources lately, if I'm doing some training and development with people, I find that is what we call the Archie Bunker effect. Now, of those of us who remember Archie Bunker, Archie Bunker said exactly the way he felt, and that's what we are seeing. People of color are not saying that the country has gotten more racist. That's nonsense. I mean, I don't even know how we can measure that. But what is happening is people that have thoughts that perhaps they were keeping, like Archie Bunker did, mm-hmm. perhaps they were just saying at their dining
room.
There's
no restraint.
Exactly.
There's no restraint now.
None.
So what can be done? What can be done? Not that this conversation is going to be anything that's going to be end all, be all, or solve anything, but at least...
But here's the thing, though,
is the one thing that you say, and you and I have had many interviews, is that eventually a conversation has to be had.
I've said that.
No matter how difficult it is.
The country is browning. For us, for people of color, it's like we're already there. I mean, we're very forgiving people. If you understand the history of civil rights, and not to take this, you guys jump in, but you understand the history of civil rights, we are very forgiving people. But what we're confused about, even if you look at Kaepernick, what we're confused about, this is a young man that did a bent knee during the national anthem that we all love, that we all respect, that we all fought for. And there seems to be a disconnect that, you know, it's
You're talking all, about Colin Kaepernick.
Colin Kaepernick, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You know, it seems to be like we're all not in this. We all are in this fight. But our concern is, and this is what I'm saying as a civil rights leader, is that, okay, you may have that issue there. You may have that issue there. But where is the patriotism? Why aren't we patriots when it comes to having an open conversation or dialogue around police misconduct? When it comes to having an open dialogue, a conversation around some of these racist remarks? If you look at social media right now, you would think that we were in a race war. And this is what I'm concerned about. I think that a lot of stuff is being fanned. And not controlled, respecting people's First Amendment rights. But I think things have gotten a little bit out of control.
Let me throw it to Keith. You want to throw something in?
Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, I'm going to throw it out to to Keith or Tony. But as far as social media, is the root of all evil.
I'm not saying that.
Is it the root of all evil? I mean, it seems as though that's where people are. You know.
Yeah. If you want to fix everything, just delete all social media, and then we can get back to all being peaceful. But
right.
No, I think first and foremost, I mean, whether you agree or disagree with Kaepernick in the idea of taking a knee during the national anthem, I don't even think it's disputable that Colin Kaepernick was successful in his idea of getting a conversation started. Because, like I said, agree or disagree, everybody in the nation is talking about this, including the President of the United States. So anytime it climbs the ladder, gets all the way to the President tweeting about it, then him taking a knee did start that conversation, whether or not it got any results. I mean, I don't know if it's done anything for police brutality. I don't know if it's done anything for racism. If anything, it's created more of a divide, but it did get the people talking about it.
And I think that's where we can kind of segue. Again, it's still part of the conversation, but we could segue and we can add in this other dynamic. And the other dynamic is there seems to be folks who are on two sides of whether or not it's okay, for depending on someone's behavior when it comes to the national anthem, whether somebody should stand, whether somebody should put their hand over their heart, whether it's okay for somebody just to sit there, whether it's okay for somebody to have a silent protest. And I think that's where I turn to Tony, a gentleman who has served the country, and he's in and around veterans all the time. My curious question would be as to some of the conversation you hear, or maybe even your thoughts on it, being somebody who has, you know, as you know,
You know, a lot of these things are American institutions. Civil rights. It's an American institution. It deserves absolute respect. The institution of policing. I mean, these are institutions. These are American traditions. The national anthem. I mean, it's an institution. There's certain things that you just don't do. I think that the idea, Jesse hit on this, the idea of, you know, Kaepernick started the conversation. I think for those of us, and there's a few of us in the room that have been working on equality issues for a long time, decades, some more than others.
Colin is in the first.
The conversation, with all due respect, brother, has been going on for a long time. So,
of course,
let's not give him too much credit.
But I'm just saying, and again, to be honest, I mean, I don't think you should take a knee during the national anthem. I don't think these guys should sit during the national anthem in NFL football. If you want to sit at home, I think most of us are sitting during the national anthem at home. But I think, you know, when it comes to football, I disagree with the idea. But I'm saying that his goal when he said that he was going to set this out was to get the conversation going. And I think I don't think it was a good way to do it, but it did get the conversation going. So the only thing that I'm saying is that the goal of everyone talking about Kaepernick,
he accelerated it. He accelerated the conversation. But I would inject one thought.
Okay.
If your purpose with any protest is to increase support for whatever your issue is, however, you do the opposite with the way you do it, and many of us believe that has happened here, I submit to you that you better relook the way you're doing your protest, because you're failing in your mission. If your mission is to increase support, but you actually decrease support from across you know, all kinds of lines, I think you better relook the way you're doing whatever business you're doing, whether it be protesting or anything.
Okay. We'll go to Keith, but Keith, just so folks know, joining us in a moment will be CBS's Mike Riley. He's on the line, so we'll go to him in just a moment. But Keith, you wanted to weigh in.
Yeah, what I wanted to weigh in on is, you know, let's talk about the Kaepernick thing and how it really got started.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, he was sitting for the first two games that he did it, and then it was somebody that pulled him aside who was a Navy veteran.
That's right.
And it was a Navy veteran who told him, look, if you want to properly protest this, this is the time to do it, and this is how you do it. And he actually showed him how to do this. So the way that you read in the flag code book and stuff and how you want to legitimately protest, this was the way he was told how to protest. This was from a Navy veteran, and that's how he handled
it. That Navy veteran was not Tony O'Brien. No. And I wouldn't have given him that advice. And I'm not saying you said that, but just because it was a Navy veteran, supposedly, you know, I don't know your source, so I'll take you on you know, your knowledge of that source. That doesn't make it right, though. He may have got, I think he got bad advice. I mean, veterans can give bad advice, too.
Well, I know I spoke with a JAG officer, Robert Resnick, last week on our show, and we've agreed that, you know, it's pretty much this whole thing has divided the veterans 50%. Half the veterans have no problem with it, and another half do have a problem with it because they serve their country. But when you talk to those who do agree with what they're doing, say they didn't take it slighted because that's why they fought for their freedom, and that's...
I think that's a great underestimation of the population of veterans.
Yeah,
and how many
probably
people,
depends on which group.
I don't agree with that stat either. I'm sorry, I just don't. It's not. Okay. I don't believe it's accurate. I don't even think it's close.
Okay. Let's bring in Mike Sarge Riley from CBS Sports. He was actually at Gillette last weekend, and this was the... And he was there for the Patriots who protested. Mike, just so you know who's in the room, we have Jesse. We have Mr. Tony O'Brien, who is your Lieutenant Commander?
Yeah.
Lieutenant Commander from who is a Navy SEAL.
Yeah.
A retired Navy SEAL. We have Keith Hayes, and we have Bishop Tony Branch. Just so you know who's in the room as part of this conversation, my friend.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for having me, and thank you for your service, all of you guys, for being there tonight, and helping out Kevin's award-winning show on WATD.
Yes, award-winning.
Yeah.
If you could, Sarge, give us your thoughts on being there. Again, you're a sports reporter. You're a guy who was at Gillette Stadium last weekend. I mean, what was some of the conversation that was going around in regards to how this took a form at Gillette Stadium?
So not only was I there last week, Kev, but also yesterday, too, and I'll tie that in just a moment with yesterday. But last week, I think the big topic of discussion was more or less the outrage toward President Trump's comments on the Friday previous, going into week three of the NFL, when he made the comments there in Alabama, calling the players sons of you know what. And I think that was the ammunition there for everybody to, for the majority of the league, to take a knee and not stand during the national anthem. So I think it was more aimed toward President Trump rather than the Kaepernick movement, because if you recall, last year with the Colin Kaepernick, when he decided to start this whole take the knee, they all kind of started to fade out after a few weeks. Besides him, there weren't that many players doing it or that got the attention of it. Especially, even if you rewind with the Patriots, the first game last year when they were at Arizona, something to think of here, they were at Arizona, the two key players that did not stand for the anthem and said they put their fists in the air, it was Devin McCourty and former Patriot, now Green Bay Packer, Martellus Bennett. After that, that did not happen at all during the remainder of the year for anybody in the Patriots. So you got to wonder if Bill Belichick or anybody in the organization said, hey, we don't do it that way. We're standing as a team here. And they did. Nobody else did that for the remainder of last season. So it's, I think for the Patriots' sake, last week, since there was so much outrage towards the president's comments, they seemed to let, you know, hey, if you want to do this, go ahead. But I think after this, we're going to be on the same page here, standing, and which they did yesterday as well. And if you recall last week, a lot of boos before and after the national anthem yesterday, a lot of applause, and about three quarters of Gillette Stadium sang the national anthem yesterday too. So very united yesterday compared to last week, if you will.
Probably the other thing that I don't know if it was anything that you had in your news in your sports reports, but not everybody followed suit with the Patriots. There were still some forms of kneeling, a lot of it in unity. The entire team, I'm talking about other teams, were doing it around the NFL. I think even over in London.
Yes, the Dolphins, and somebody, Darren Revelle, ESPN, had a tweet out yesterday. Last week, 180 players decided to take a knee, and yesterday, leading to kickoff, only 11 took a knee. So, yeah, the Dolphins, some of the Dolphins did that yesterday in London, but that's a major cutback from what we saw last week. And again, I got to go back to the outrage with the comments that the president made on the Friday leading up to it. That was what he said about the players. I think that was the whole situation on that.
So if I can kind of go with the folks, to Mike and the folks in the room, what is the middle ground to at least be able to have the conversation in regards to police brutality, in regards to what's going on here in our country, and being able to honor the national anthem? Is there a conversation? Is there a middle ground? Or are we not there yet?
No, I think what people get confused is that we can't have a conversation alone.
Right.
So I think that's
but the start.
But we've been with all fair. I mean, we've been trying to have a conversation since I started advocacy over 35 years ago. So we've been trying to have a conversation, and I mean, those conversations were when we were saying that people were being shot. We were saying that there was brutality, but there was no video. Now that we have video, you would think after Rodney King up, you would think that everyone in this country would want to have a conversation. And I think that what has happened now, especially with President Trump, I mean, he did the boogeyman routine. He did some dog whistling. I mean, he said that those guys should be fired, and he calls them sons of a bitches. I mean, so we men of color know, we know what all these code words mean. And I guess what frustrates us is that, you know, and nothing against Commander Tony, the great work that he's done, he served our country, but when will the veterans that are on the opposite side, when will they be willing to have a conversation around police misconduct and all this stuff around racism? That's what my concern is. Why is it that we're stuck still on kneeling knees and the anthem and not focusing on, we've been talking about this for over 50 years. When are we going to get there?
Keith?
And I'm going to touch base on something here that a lot of people haven't heard yet, but it was brought out to me by, this was from a Marine veteran. We go back to a lot of these police brutalities and these police situations, and I'm just going to give you a little bit of eye-opening information here for you. Sometimes I feel like these incidents are kind of like Jedi mind tricks to what the real problem is that's going on in society. You have a lot of black males that have been shot over the years, but you also have a lot of white males being shot also. Now, what I'm being told is let's take Alton Sterling, Mr. Sterling, down to New Orleans, that shooting that happened down there. You know, everybody made it as a race issue, this and that. Now, I was told by someone that that's not where this problem is. The problem that you're having with a lot of police departments today is that you have a lot of policemen who have been hired who are former soldiers, guys who went over the Desert Storm or Iraq, and they came back. And what happened was, is a lot of police stations, they didn't hire a lot of veterans because they didn't want the liability. But what happened is, I forget what year it was, but the government put a kickback out there. So if you hire veterans, you get kickbacks for hiring these veterans. And what I'm being told is that you're having a lot of veterans that are hired to police forces that have PTSD. So what happens is you have a lot of these officers who get in these situations. I'm hearing that the Alton Sterling situation that happened in New Orleans, that officer was already clinically diagnosed with PTSD. And he got into a situation where he threw all of his police training out the window, and all of a sudden his military training comes into play. If this is true, and if this is the case, you don't have a race issue here. You have a multi-million dollar class action lawsuit on your hands. If this is the case where you start checking these officers out that are doing these situations, and if you find out that a lot of these guys are veterans, and if these guys have been clinically diagnosed with PTSD, guess what? You don't have a race issue here. You have a bigger problem here, because now you're going to figure in how many white guys, how many women, how many...
Let's go back to in regards to respect to the flag. Does it still warrant to be respected, or is it something that whenever there needs to be a protest, it's used for that?
The flag. Okay, so
the national anthem.
No, I get
the country. Yes.
So you know, I have a son that's in the United States Army, and
I have a daughter who's in.
We did our lineage, and it goes all the way back to the Civil War.
Right.
The flag needs to be respected. I have a hard time even accepting people saying that it's okay to burn. I read the Supreme Court's ruling with respect to free speech, but of course the flag should be respected. But to go back to the point the sergeant was making, I think that this really got highlighted, because remember, the Cabin Act stuff started when Obama was president. I think what it really got highlighted when the president of the United States, when Donald Trump decided to weigh in on it, and he made those derogatory remarks. It is unusual for a president to weigh in on citizens exercising their First Amendment rights. And I think that that's when you had, because you remember the owners weren't hiring Cabin Act. Mm. So I think that's when owners...
They still have it.
They still have it, right.
Because it comes with controversy. Exactly.
And that's their business model, and I get that. But they many of them locked arms with the players on this one when the president weighed in. So I think that one of the reasons why it got so highlighted this time around is because the president weighed in on it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you're right.
Go ahead, Jesse.
I think this has turned away from the original discussion, which
exactly.
I think is bad for the cause of solving this issue with police brutality, because now it has nothing to do with police brutality.
Right.
I disagree. I do think that it was bad that Trump said that in his rally. Obviously, he's just trying to fire up his base. This actually is a winning issue for Trump, because I think it's around 85% of the country agree that you should stand for the national anthem, you should respect the flag, and I think the 50-50 stat is a little skewed, not to, bring that back up. But I think, I have a lot of family that are in the military. I didn't serve myself, but 100% of them are like, no, stand for the anthem, stand for the anthem. I've seen a couple people on Facebook that served that were like, no, you should do what you want.
But is it an old school, new school thing? Hold on now. Because I'll tell you, last weekend, I went to two sporting events.
Mm-hmm.
And both times... come on, you've been to sporting events. They play the national anthem. I myself stand up, put my hand over my heart. I don't expect anybody else to.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But when I look around, I saw younger people.
Cell phones.
They're more worried about the cell phone, and they're more focused on just, they couldn't be bothered.
I saw this,
again, it's a small sample size.
I gotcha.
Small sample size and no disrespect, but what I noticed when I was, the demographic I saw, it was people who were under the age of 30.
Yeah.
That was just sitting, and it was okay. But I looked and go,
I don't think they were protesting. I think they were probably just being kids. You know,
that's
so
what
I
saying, though.
Well, you have to look at it as the athletes that are on the
ignorant.
Field. So are that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's still ignorant.
It is.
Being a season ticket holder, you know, for the longest time for the Patriots, you know, like I said, it's what's worse? Mm. Is it worse that they're kneeling, or is it worse that when the national anthem comes
not
on,
paying attention.
And they're trying to hold you from coming down the aisle, and you got the guy that wants to be a loudmouth and wants to come down the aisle when you're not supposed to come down the aisle during?
Well, he's usually four beers in.
Yeah.
So.
Or how about the guys that are going to get beers during the national anthem? Yeah. Or how about the guys that are going to, you know, it's the same thing.
Sure.
You know, those they're just as bad, in my opinion.
Kev, also, if you don't, if you guys
go ahead, Mike.
Real
yeah, Mike.
Quick, you know, the league. I think the league might be a year late on this for the players' aspect.
Absolutely.
And what I mean by that is potential punishments. And being here in New England, we know about punishments that the league has handed down. Let's not talk about that.
Right.
But we know that there is, in the rule book, it does say in a game operation manual that the national anthem, according to the NFL, must be played prior to every game, and all players on the sideline are to be on the field and stand at attention, face the flag, hold helmets in their left hand, and refrain from talking. So they didn't enforce that last year with the Kaepernick situation, and then other players, of course, that did, you know, jump on that, if you will. And I think they're a year late on that if they are potentially looking to punish players, or as President Trump has suggested, fire players. So technically, they are getting paid under their watch, but they're a little late to the game on it if any punishment has to be handed down.
I want to get, Tony, did you want to weigh in?
There's so much to say. There's so much to say. I wish we had a couple hours. did you have to take a break or something? Or
we do, but I know Keith wanted to. Keith, if you could quickly.
Mike was bringing up the NFL rule book, and I just want to let you know, just go on my Facebook page. I actually have the NFL rule book posted to my Facebook page at A62, A63. That doesn't exist. That's not true. The real A62 and A63 is completely something else. There is no rule in the rule book in the NFL regarding standing up during the national anthem.
Normally, with any employer-employee situation, normally any type of unusual protest isn't done in the workplace.
Right.
By the way, a lot of the pro leagues, and I don't know the details on this stuff, I'm no expert, but a lot of the pro leagues do have specific rules with regards to how you're supposed to conduct yourself during the anthem. Look, freedom of speech and right to protest, there are limits. I mean, we have to agree on that. It's not unlimited. And just so everybody knows, Anthony O'Brien is a white guy. Okay, I know I've got a lot of freckles, but I'm a white guy.
That was good, Commander.
Bishop Tony and I have shared a stage and a podium many times.
Yep,
I know the work that he and Keith do in the community, yourself, Kevin, as
absolutely.
Well. And so do I.
Yeah.
I'm no stranger to the MLK event.
You're not.
To the
That's
NAACP
right.
yeah. events.
Right.
And I don't go to those for any reason except that I believe in the causes. I grew up in Brockton.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Cape Verdean community, the Haitian community. I'm close to these folks.
Yeah.
When I show,
you're black.
I'm often one of the few white guys in the room.
That's right. That's
and I'm very comfortable.
I know you.
Very comfortable in the room. That's why I'm honored to be here.
Thank
right
you.
Now. But
yeah.
Here's one of my criticisms for the NFL players. I kind of get it. Okay. I know I get a lot of this, and
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
never the smartest guy in the room, and I'm not the smartest guy
not.
In this room right now. Okay. But here's one of the things. It kind of hurts a little bit. It's got to hurt you guys a little bit too. All right. Some of these guys. I would love to have a conversation with, it won't happen, but I would love to say, what have you done for these causes? Okay, equality, police misconduct, etc. You know, and by the way, why is the protest happening on the public sidewalk in front of the police station? Okay, because, I mean, that's the appropriate place for the
that's
thing.
That's a big thing. Right? I mean, they got all the cameras on them at the NFL game.
Absolutely.
So I think it comes down to
the
a
audience.
Fundamental question is...
Well,
is I know that they have the right, but is it right?
Oh, no. It's inappropriate.
And do they have the right to do what they want
and you
work?
Can't say, well, I didn't intend to disrespect. Well, wait a minute. Intent is only part of the game.
Right.
But one of the questions I have is, when was the last time these guys that are making all this money that we're paying them, by the way, when was the last time they made a donation to some of these causes? When was the last time they donated a couple hours to some of these causes? A fraction of them do. Some of them do.
Kaepernick does.
He does.
Some of them do. Most of them, I submit most of them do not.
Yeah.
They do not.
I
it's convenient.
Give,
take a knee.
Before we take a knee for this, for this portion of the
pun,
I want to give Mike Riley a chance to kind of close, give his closing comments before we say goodbye to him, and thank Mike for being a part of the conversation that we're having here tonight. Mike, anything you want to say quickly in closing?
Yeah, just a heads up. You know, that thing I just read was not the NFL rulebook. Just to preface what I did say, it was a game operations manual. That's what it was. And the league does go by that, they say, with the league game operation manual there. And it does go on to say that clubs facing warnings and other penalties for noncompliance, they could have that if they don't follow the game operation manual there. So that's not technically in the rule book.
But it is part of the job.
The manual. So just wanted to make that clear on that. But, no, very good conversation, healthy for everybody on both sides of this. And I'm very interested to see what's going to happen the remainder of the year. And more importantly, maybe Colin Kaepernick could find his way back into the NFL because of all this.
His stats are horrible. Let's be real honest here from the sports guys. There's a reason why he's not playing.
Yeah, he's a horrible quarter. Well, he's a below
average quarterback.
That was Keith.
That wasn't O'Brien. But hold on.
San Francisco Dolphins could use him.
Hey, San Francisco still
not great.
Yeah, but San Francisco's 0-4 without him still. So,
you guys.
Listen, Mike, I
think Trotz should play quarterback.
There you go. Mike, I want to thank you so much for joining the conversation, my friend.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. God bless.
Good job, Sarge.
Mike Sarge Riley, CBS Sports. We are going to step aside. We have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to open the floodgates. We're going to let you call in. If you don't call in, we're going to continue the conversation. So this is your opportunity. 781-837-4900. We're going to step aside. When we come back, more Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
It happened at the supermarket, November 20th, 1993, a Saturday. Most people do not buy duck. We are not a duck-eating people. Who thinks of duck? College quarterback Dick Wright did. On impulse, he pulled a nice frozen duck out of the freezer. But then he noticed it had the shape and the feel of a football. Cold as Green Bay, but a football. So on his way out, there's his brother by the pickup, about 35 yards. Bill gets a grip on that duck. He faints toward the end zone. His brother goes wide left, and that frozen duck had the ride of its life. That wobbling duck just flew. It smashed through the fingertips of the wide receiver and demolished the windshield of Sal Roseo's 89 Firebird. You just can't put a good spiral on a frozen duck.
I'm Tiny of Tiny and Sons Glass. We come to your work or home, and we fix your windshield. Your insurance company covers it. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
My dad did a great job.
How much of a difference could the new cancer center at Signature Healthcare make in your life? The difference of getting all the advanced care you need in one location, right here in your community. The difference of having your own personalized cancer care team, covering every aspect of your treatment with access to national clinical trials. The difference of scheduling your first appointment within a day so you can get started on your treatment right away.
I'm Dr. Stephen Lane, Chief of Radiation Oncology at the Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare. Here we deliver world-class care right in your community with Harvard-affiliated physicians working hand-in-hand with specialists from Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. That's one of the ways the Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare is making a difference every day.
To learn more about the difference we could make in your life, visit our website, mysignaturecare.org/cancercare. The Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk.
We return to our roundtable conversation with Bishop Tony Branch, Keith Hayes, Lieutenant Commander Anthony O'Brien Sr., and, of course, Jesse Wilkins. My name is Kevin Tachi. We open the phone lines. This is your opportunity to get involved with the conversation. If you want to comment on one of the topics that we have mentioned so far, please be kind enough to specify when it's your time to talk, if you do call in. The number to join us, 781-837-4900. And as we anticipate and wait your phone calls...
Can you also announce what other platforms we're on? Some of the guys says we're live on Facebook Live. But can you announce whatever those connections are, so if anybody wants to dial us up and...
Is it strictly Keith Hayes? Keith Hayes on Facebook. Keith
Hayes, Tony Branch.
Bishop Tony Branch.
And
you just search Jesse Wilkins on Instagram.
Jesse Wilkins.
Okay, yes. Cool. Appreciate it.
That's what we're on right at this moment.
Awesome.
But I think while we wait for folks to call in, if they want to weigh in, if we haven't kind of already answered some of their questions, I think it's worth talking about what took place today. We're talking about, I mean, I woke up at 4:30 this morning and was yet shocked to hear that first it was two deaths and a handful of folks that were injured.
Right.
It ballooned up to, what, 20?
25 at 3 in the morning. Then when I scanned out at work at 5:50, it was up to 50.
Yeah, it jumped. So it's interesting that this took place, and this is taking place a year after the Pulse nightclub tragedy down in Orlando. Mm-hmm. We've had, the incident that took place down at the Sandy Hook Elementary School, the shooting. And let's not forget Columbine.
Mm-hmm.
It was another one where, individuals entered a school and just started shooting. This is different, and I think each incident has been somewhat different.
Well, Keith sounds like the attorney in the room, actually, with the number of times you've mentioned lawsuits.
He's channeling some guy named Ken.
No, it's appropriate. Sure. Every time he said it, and now he's got me thinking about that in this case.
Right.
And I think one of the big issues that's going to come out of this is security. Okay. How's it going to work? Can you have these kind of events? Okay, with somebody that has public access to,
let's be honest,
sniper's nest.
He rented a room at Mandalay Bay and he's shooting. So
I don't think they didn't even know where the shots were coming from.
I don't think any security would have stopped that, number one. And one thing I do have to mention,
you got
to
have the event in another room. You can't have it in a what is it, like the atrium or something?
But here's the point that I want to make, though, with this. There are some people out there who, and I just got to let you know right now, I'm not happy with it. There's some people out there who are making some stupid-ass jokes about the fact that this is a country event and blah, blah, blah. Look, I'm just going to let you guys know right now that we are just 1 month away from this being a real serious issue if this happened 1 month before. Let's take, for example, what if this happened at Mandalay Bay during the UFC fight? Mm. Now you've got people from this area. You've got a lot of guys, Joe Lozon, John Doomsday Howard. Yep. You've got a lot of guys here in the MMA community that fly out to Vegas for all these fights.
On a regular
Not only
basis,
these
yep.
fighters, but their schools and their friends and their family. And it's a scary situation.
Right.
It's a real scary situation.
All right, we're going to go to the phones, and we have Newbie from Brockton. Newbie, what do you want to touch upon? What's your comment?
Newbie. Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Hey, Newbie.
Yo, Roger, partner.
First of all, a lot to talk about. Just condolences out to
Amen.
Obviously, what's going on in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. That was awful. I just want to comment on two things quickly.
Please.
Number one, you guys are talking about the situation in Vegas. There's no realistic way you can stop that.
Right.
Yeah. And, and a couple of years ago, I did a documentary with Tony was on it and so forth. Mm. I was completely against them. I still hate guns. But let's just say he doesn't have guns. What's stopping him from taking a truck and ramming it into a whole bunch of people?
Which we're seeing now. Yeah.
Okay, so the reality is, what are you going to do? I think we're at a point right now where it's unfortunate, but there's no realistic way to stop that. You're going to go in and check everyone's bag who enters a hotel, it's a situation where it's dicey, it's unfortunate, it's awful, but realistically, my question to you guys is, how do you stop that?
Well, if I can just jump in for half a second, some of the latest reports as before I came in this evening. One of the things that was said was that room service had gone into the room. They did not see anything suspicious, like, bags or any guns or anything. They didn't see anything that would have tipped them off or for them to be able to go down to the front desk or their manager and say, hey, this guy is armed to the teeth. They didn't see that, or I would believe we would have been hearing about an arrest of a guy who had a large cache of weapons. Jesse?
Yeah, I think that the rush to politicize this is just...
It's natural.
It's going to happen no matter what happens.
ISIS already ISIS jumped on it and said that they're claiming
they've
responsibility.
They've quadrupled down now trying to claim responsibility. But that shocked me. I was like, this guy doesn't look like
obviously
a Muslim.
Obviously, you didn't see the picture of the guy.
But it doesn't matter. Muslim isn't a race. It could be anybody, and you never know. But I think what we have in this country is a mental health problem, not a gun problem.
Yep.
And we do have a problem where sometimes guns can land in the hands of people that are mentally ill. But, even in this case, the gun that he used was an automatic weapon. There's a federal ban on automatic weapons. He wasn't getting his hand on that without a thorough background check, a psych evaluation,
supposedly
getting fingerprinted,
legal.
License, everything like that.
Right.
So,
And
he obtained it illegally, and that's the point. That's the only way to get these guns is getting them illegally. He already broke the law. And honestly, someone that's going out to kill 60-plus people
they're
isn't
do
interested
it.
In obeying the law.
Let's go back to Newbie. Newbie, finish making your... I apologize for interjecting.
I do want to also make... You know, I want to come on that, but I also want to come on the flag situation
please
with Colin
do,
Kaepernick.
Please.
I just think it's important that we realize with the Colin Kaepernick situation, yes, you know, we have hundreds of players kneeling now. But we need to not forget the reason why they're kneeling. We're focusing so much on how many players are kneeling for the anthem rather than why they're kneeling. And you know, I think Donald Trump distracted that issue when he you know, kind of put gasoline on the fire last week. But I think, you know, that needs to be, you know, we need to focus on why those players are kneeling in the first place. Number two, quickly, you know, in terms of the national anthem, I think it's really important that we have something that unites us. You know, and the national anthem is one of those things. And I know there's a lot of controversy behind it, but we need something that there's so many, everyone's divided on so many issues. That national anthem is something that maybe should unite. I'm a teacher. I make my students pledge allegiance every day. You know, law schools don't do that. But I think it's important that we need one thing to unite us. And at the time, it was a national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think it's very important that, you know, find out the reason why they're kneeling, which is important, and we're avoiding that issue. Now we're counting who's kneeling, who's not. But also, let's think, you know, we need to find a reason where we can find one common interest and come together. And at one point, that was the national anthem. I mean, if you guys seen, you know, there was a great documentary in 1990 about the 1992 Dream Team, how Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan, how they looked at the national anthem differently. I think the issue is that when people think of the flag now, they think of the president, which is unfortunate. But, you know, like I said before, you know, Harriet Tubman and Malcolm X and Martin Luther King are just as American as Donald Trump and you know, every other, you know, people that they disagree with. And you need to understand that that flag also represents them.
Well, Newbie, I want to thank you. Excellent points, and thank you for stepping up big time.
Take it easy, guys.
You got it. There he is. Newbie from Brockton.
Another media star, by the way.
Award-winning documentarian.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get in, we just got a couple of minutes left here. 781-837-4900. Was it Bishop or Keith? One of you wanted to say something?
Newbie just jumped in my head real quick. He mentioned about the respect for the flag and the Dream Team and Michael Jordan and Larry Bird. Look, first of all, I'm just going to say something right now. Jordan is a great basketball player, but let's go back to that Dream Team. And when he got up there and took that gold, look, first of all, you guys should be very upset because he disrespected the flag. Why? Because he was under contract with Nike. The only reason why he got up there and got patriotic is because Reebok sponsored the Olympics that year, and he didn't want to get up there and collect his gold with his Reebok uniform on. Mm-hmm. So what he did was he disrespected the flag, took the flag off the chair, and draped the flag over him when he got his gold for the Olympics because he didn't want to show any type of support for Reebok. So when people want to go up there and say that he was being patriotic and he was crying, no, he wasn't. No, he wasn't. He draped the flag over him to cover the Reebok symbol because he was a Nike guy. And he's also the guy that supported Nike when Nike was going down to South America and there was a ban because Mandela was in jail and Nike was the only sneaker going to Africa. And that was the first year that the Jordans came out. So anybody that wants to say Jordan's this patriotic guy, no, he's not.
And I'll argue with anybody. And when are you releasing this book?
I'm just letting people know because...
That's good Jordan, stuff.
You know, Jordan's a great guy. I take nothing away from him on the court. But as far as him as a human being and as a businessman, he's a shrewd, ruthless businessman. He's not patriotic. And if he really cared about Jordans and the price of Jordans and being patriotic, guess what? He'd show up to the hood and he'd tell these kids that the sneakers aren't worth $300 and not worth killing people over. And he is yet to do that.
Besides draping the flag over his shoulders, which, I mean, there's a lot of things that people do that they don't realize is technically against the etiquette. Like, you're not supposed to wear a flag on your shirt. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to have flag underwear. You're not supposed to have flag socks.
Drive down the street with the flag in the back of your pickup truck.
Yeah, you can't do. Yeah, you're not supposed to do all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, it's well intentioned. I think that the taking the knee is. I understand that, you know, if you're trying to do it to bring light on the racial issue, what they're doing in the eyes of many troops, I would say the majority of troops, is they're disrespecting the flag. Now, do they have a right to? Do they have a right to freedom of speech? Of course. No one's saying they belong in jail for taking a knee during the national anthem. We're just saying it's a slap in the face to many Americans.
So with that said, slap in the face to many Americans, you know, one of the things when you do these sort of dialogues, say I agree with you 1,000%, but how do we get to the point where you're very strong on that issue? Can you be just as strong on the issue of what's happening with police brutality?
I think everyone's against racism. Most people are. I know there are some very bad, very racist people. I agree that racism exists. I'm just saying that, you know, it all roots back to, you know, being against police brutality. We all are. We're all against racism. You know, we can all unite under that.
Right.
But we're also against the way that it's perceived and the way that it's displayed and the way that you push that forward.
So you would agree if a jury jury has found what it looks, you look at the video, you see one thing different. Clearly it was a cop murdering, an unarmed person, but the jury, for whatever reason, a judge in Maryland, for whatever reason, finds that person not guilty, you would stand with the civil rights community.
If I looked at a case, like for instance, there was a case down in, I think, St. Louis, and I'm sorry, I see you going
on.
There was a case down in St. Louis where the officer shot the guy in the back who was running away.
Correct.
That was obviously a murder. That was a bad racist attack. He's in jail for that. You know, but if he had gotten away with that, of course I'd be like, that's awful.
So you would stand with us?
Of course.
Amen.
Of course.
Keith?
Real quick, you know, I'm a guy that, you know, a lot of people think I'm a young guy. I'm not. I'm an older guy. Grew up in Boston. I was one of the first kids bused to Brighton in the 70s and had my rock pelted with.
Exactly.
As I lived in Mission Hill, and my bus was followed by an army of cops. While I went to school and I was called the N-word and had excrement thrown on the bus, and I'd be friends with white kids in school, and they'd come out and their parents would rip them away and call me the N-word. My question is everybody here is upset about those players kneeling?
Right.
Let's look back at those players who we now call trendsetters and pioneers and heroes. Muhammad Ali, he's a guy that didn't fight for his army, took the Muslim name. Right. Let's look at Rosa Parks. The word was that blacks couldn't sit in the front. She sat in the front. That was against the rule. Let's look back at the two gentlemen who represented the United States in Olympics. Germany, I believe, correct, and put their fists up in the air, who are now labeled as pioneers. My question is what are we going to call these players who did take this action, and what is Colin Kaepernick going to be called years from now?
Correct. I'm going to correct your statement. Not everybody's upset in regards to their actions, so that's an incorrect statement. But I will say, is it Tony, you want to say something in closing before I say what I say?
Just a couple quick things. Do look up Michael Jordan. From what, only because you raised the issue, from what I understand, he donated $1 million to both sides of this issue, including the some police association and then also to like the NAACP.
That was, I remember that.
For what that's worth.
Yeah.
And now he's got millions to throw around. Also, we got to be careful not to manage by exception. And you find that out a lot. I would also challenge Keith, my friend, on the PTSD military veterans numbers and the hiring the police departments. I can tell you right now that the veterans community within policing in Massachusetts is pretty strong. And with regards to police misconduct, I mean, I'd be careful not to manage by exception. Jesse raised the issue of the guy that was prosecuted, and I would stand with you, except for, the jury system and the judge system is a huge cornerstone of our democracy as well. I mean, we've got to trust that to a certain degree.
You have to trust it, I think.
And there's also an appeal system.
Yeah,
But black people have a problem in trusting that system because of what is done to us.
Both sides got a lot of work to do.
Okay, exactly.
Both sides got a lot of work.
And gentlemen, and with that,
ask Bill Cosby.
He was the guy that was saying before the sexual escapades,
pull up your pants and
do I have to bring the bell out, Tony?
I'm just saying.
I have to bring the bell
out. We hear you, Commander. We hear you.
Folks, we're just about out of time. I want to thank everybody who tuned in, the individuals who are in this room and having the conversation, and that's where it has to start, but it has to go beyond just the conversation. And I think that has to be the biggest problem that we have in this country right now, not just necessarily as far as cultures, but as far as folks who are our leaders being able to find a common ground and be able to agree on things.
Amen.
There has to be a conversation, and then there has to be action to follow that. That's all I have to say.
Right.
Thank you so much for tuning into Monday Night Talk. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great evening.
Thanks, guys.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.